Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Welcome to my podcast, where we are going to talk about a lifestyle with dogs and threw in a few life lessons along the way. Whether you're a hound hunter, bird dog enthusiast, running setters, pointers, retrievers, or a flat-out running dog junkie, this podcast is for you. I am your host, Heath Hyatt, a certified law enforcement canine trainer with over 3 decades of personal and professional training and handling experience. It's time for me to pay it forward, so grab your leads, lace up those boots, and come and join me on this lifelong process of teaching, training, and learning. Are you looking to unlock your dog's full potential and give them the best nutrition possible for peak performance? Then look no further. Inukshuk has what you're looking for. Inukshuk's nutrient-dense formulas are crafted to keep your dog's energy high and performance top-notch. Packed with premium proteins and essential fats, Inukshuk delivers the balanced nutrition your dog needs to thrive. From hunting dogs to police canines, Inukshuk is trusted by professionals. Give your dog the power of peak performance with Inukshuk Professional Dog Food. It is spring gobbler season, and we are in the heart of the Bluegrass State. We're back in Kentucky with our good friend Jerry, and I'm gonna tell you guys, man, he take care of me. He puts me up in a cabin. He fills the refrigerator full of food. I can't even eat half of what he puts in there. And
Trying to fatten you up.
Well, I don't need fattened. I need to unfatten.
I fatten you up so I can keep up with you.
I'm trying to lose weight, Jerry, and I can gain it. But, yeah, we come back. Like, this is going to be a yearly trip, man. I enjoy it. We just got through eating a big old bait for supper. We had steak and baked potatoes and a salad. And, man, I just enjoy being down here. I just told Jerry, I said,
yeah,
man.
We enjoy having you.
Yeah. Yeah. I like staying here. Like, I really like it. It's peaceful.
Yeah.
If you guys could picture, maybe I'll put a picture up for the podcast, but if you guys could picture, man, there's a little rolling creek behind us, you know, some fields out in front. This is basically down a valley, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
where we're at. Yeah.
Creek bottom.
Yeah, creek bottom. You know, fields on both sides, creek right behind us. Yesterday, we'll get into the turkeys in a minute. But, yeah, I mean, it's peaceful. You come down here, I barely got cell service. In fact, Maddie just texted me. It did come through, and I was shocked. But I barely got cell service. My phone has not rang. Not one time in the last 2 days. So it's like a vacation on a vacation for me. But, yeah, so we're back. I guess we should catch you guys up from – so last year when we were here, we caught you up on the 2 days that we had hunted. And we're right back in the same boat. We've hunted 2 days, and we got one more to go. So let's catch you up on the last day from last year first. Tell us about it, Jerry.
Well, we'd been after gobblers. We'd heard them gobble them. Just couldn't get them to work for us. And we went down on the creek below the house, and we heard some gobbling up on the hill. And there was one bird he just kept going back and forth on the ridge. And so we just finally decided to go after him. And we climbed this pretty steep hill and got up there. And there was actually some more gobblers out in the field, and we set up on them, and Heath was down below me where I could see him, but I couldn't see him real good. But then we were sitting there, and we called a little bit, and then bang, I heard a shot. I guess the gobbler that was walking back and forth on the ridge snuck up behind Heath, and I think he kind of had a swing on him a little bit to kill him, but we got him killed.
Oh, he was looking for love in all the wrong places. He did. He tried to come in behind me, and if he had not gobbled over that hill that I was sitting on, if he hadn't gobbled, I don't know that I would have turned. Because when he gobbled, I'm like, oh, crap. So I swung, and literally as soon as I got my gun around, I seen that head come around a tree. And I think I told you. Like, there was only one spot there, and he had to step in between two trees, and that was it. It was like shooting down a bowling alley. Like, when they say a turkey shoot, that's what that was. But, yeah, he stepped out in that little window right there and put the old dirt nap on him. Oh,
yep.
Can't stop the flop. But that was a good bird. What was he? Yeah. Was he 25?
I think so.
Yeah, he's 25, and I don't know, 10, 11-inch beard?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. He's a good bird. He tasted good, too, because we've already eaten him up. That's why we're back here trying to get another one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good time. So that was last year. This year, I'm going to tell you, me and Jerry talked about this. We was riding around yesterday evening. Like, the amount of hens, like, you can't – this is not at my house, most of the hunting I do is on National Forest. I got one little farm that I can hunt, but – so like I told Jerry, they're either there or they're not. There's no in-between. Last year, absolutely not there. Never heard a gobble in there. And we can ride around. You ride around long enough here, you're going to see hens in the field.
Yeah, they're out. They're looking for those nesting places.
Yeah. I mean, we seen out of the front door of the cabin yesterday, was it five, six,
yep.
Seven? Was it seven? Yeah, we seen one on top of the hill, too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So seven. And then coming off the creek at Jerry's house, we seen two and then one more on side of the hill. So that's 11. Yeah. Yeah, we seen 11 hens yesterday, not counting the five that was with one of the birds that we set. Yeah. We watched that booger from daylight till, what, 9 o'clock?
Yeah, it was 9 o'clock at least.
Yeah. And we the closest we could get to him was 80 yards. We got pinned down in a bad location. And, you know, as smart as us humans are, we did the same mistake again today.
Yeah.
We got pinned down in the same stinking location. Yeah. But, yeah, that bird yesterday had five hens with him. And he would answer when we called, but he didn't even look our way.
Strutted the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for 2 hours straight. Didn't say a whole lot either.
No.
And then we heard, five birds total?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we went and got on another one. Well, I say we went and set up on another one. And he was so close you could hear him drum. When he gobbled, I mean, you could hear it. And then he turned and went away from us. And I'm not sure. I mean, he didn't leave out of there, but every time he gobbled, he was a little farther, and then he ended up topping out. And we heard two birds back left-handed to where we were set up. So on the way out, we decided, oh, we're going to call for that one. So we call a couple times and nothing. And we hit the edge of the field, and we're walking around the edge of the field. And as soon as we top over the hill, I mean, literally, that bird was, what, within 50, 60 yards of us?
Yeah.
And standing close. Right out in the middle of the field, boom, there comes that big old head up out of the grass. And me and Jerry dropped down. We looked like somebody had shot us. We dropped down. We dropped down in the dirt, tried to get our binoculars out, and I poked my head up, and I'm like, gone. We didn't know which way he went. So we stood there for a few minutes trying to see if we could see him or see which way he'd went. Nothing. So then we eased on back around to the truck, and we got within sight of the truck right there at the pond.
Yeah.
And Jerry does the old flop again. He's like, he's right there at the pond. Well, I'm covered. I can't see over some hedgerow, like some, I don't know, what do you call it, grass he didn't cut. I couldn't see over it. So I get down on my belly, and I crawl up to the grass, and I'm crawling. And I'm looking back at Jerry to give me a yay or nay. He gives me a thumbs up. So I'm trying to peep up out of this grass, and I still can't see him. And I get my binoculars out, and, I mean, I'm looking and looking and looking, and I still can't see him. Well, about that time, he pops his head out between me and the truck. And he didn't run off, but he knew something was going on. So he got up in that tall grass, and it amazes me that, like, how well hidden he was. If his head wasn't a big old red head, I don't know that we would have seen him going up through the field. And he went right through the middle of the field and topped over. So let's go back to the binoculars. And I'm assuming that most of you guys carry them with you, but I carry a set of the Vortex. I got 10 by 42s. I actually got a smaller set that I carry in my tack vest during my car at work, but I've got these in my chest rig. And Jerry and I sat and watched that bird yesterday, and when they hit the wood line, we couldn't really see them because they were about they were 180 yards by then.
Yeah, something like that.
So I'm sitting there watching this bird, and he's still in full strut going back. All of a sudden, these two birds come right-handed, and they come in there pretty hot. And when they come in there, old Big Tom, he had his back to them. Well, they come in there and circled him. Well, they didn't fight, but they had a good sparring session.
Yeah. They weren't invited to the party.
So anyway, he ran them back, and he literally would stay in between them and the hens, and the hens kept feeding left-handed. And we watched them. I mean, they literally, we couldn't move. We didn't want to spook them, so we literally sat there and watched them for probably another 45 minutes or better.
I thought they were never going to leave.
Yeah, I mean, it was a long time. But we watched them, and literally the two Jakes, that's what happened. It was two Jakes. They come in there. Well, they would puff up and fan up, and he'd turn, and it'd be like a stare down. He'd just stare at them, and this went on and on and on, and finally they worked their way over the hill, and the Jakes kind of paralleled them. They stayed right above them and went. They ended up all going that way. But why I'm talking about the binoculars, because at one point in time, we were getting up and moving because we thought they were gone. And we pulled the binoculars back out, and those birds had not crested the hill, but they were in the woods 50 yards. And with the naked eye, you couldn't see them.
No, absolutely not.
And, you know, I started carrying them things, I don't know, probably 2 years ago. Last year, I brought them with me up here. And now it's like I'm not going turkey hunting without them because you can see things that you can't see. And I think where I'm getting old, my eyesight's getting bad anyway. But
yeah, this time of year, everything looks like a turkey. So,
oh, how many hens we seen that wasn't hens today? Yeah. We're stopping. What is that? Blow out the binocular. Oh, it's a stump. We drive down the road. And we were down at that creek, coming down that creek bed. It was a stump sticking up. I mean, it looked just like a hen with a naked eye. And it was not. But yeah, I'm a pretty big believer in the binoculars and taking them and being able to scope things out. And well, I tell you what, when we seen him yesterday, we seen he was fanned out across the hill, and I started scoping him out with the binoculars while Jerry got up underneath where we were going, and I could see the hens with him. And I couldn't see the hens because they weren't blowed up like he was. And anyway, he ended up having five hens with him. So we let them go and went back this morning, and exact same thing. We got pinned down. And we even talked about it. We're like,
yeah,
we're going to go to this point this morning. Like, we're going right here. And we stood around, and then they gobbled. And before we could get where we needed to go, they were already out in the field, so we couldn't get any closer. How close was that bird to us today? Now the decoys were 38 yards.
He was about 20 yards on the other side of the decoys. So
50-60 yards,
yeah,
total.
Of course,
yeah,
couldn't see him because he's over that crest. But.
Yeah. So Jerry snuck down the creek and he was watching him and letting me know where he was at. Yeah. And then, I mean, we had been sitting there a while, and I was trying to move my seat, my pad that's attached to my vest, and I had kind of put one arm underneath me and was sliding it down, and here comes, there's a hen right in between the decoys, and I'm like, oh, crap. Well, she sees me. She's not sure what it is, so she turns and takes about three quick steps, and all I can see at that point is just the top of her head, and well, she floats back over, and then it was 30 more minutes before he popped back out.
I had a pretty comfortable seat. I got in behind that tree on that little bank, and I could raise up, and I could see the tip of his fan.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew he was still there, so I'd wait, and I think, well, he's gone now, so I'd raise up, and there's that tip of the fan in the same place.
Yeah.
He did come up the hill there toward the fence that one time, and I could see his head that time, but man, he just stayed in that one spot. It seemed like forever.
Yeah.
And he had to come up there because the decoys were there, but he just wouldn't come on into them.
Yeah. Well, we're going to fix it tomorrow. But anyway, so we're getting ready to leave. Jerry texts me and says, I think they left. Well, I get ready to stand up, and I see him in the top corner of the field. So I'm trying to communicate with Jerry without yelling, and I'm whistling, and Jerry ain't looking at me, and I'm whistling louder, and I'm like, hey, and he finally looks at me, and I'm pointing at the top of the field, and he gets up there, and he struts around there he actually gobbles a time or two, but you know, you think that a bird will not go through a fence, because we talked about this, we're like, they're not going to go through that fence, what'd he do?
Went through the fence.
He went through the fence, all of them. So he had two hens with him.
Yeah.
So after they got gone, Jerry and I got back together, and he goes, you think that was the same bird as yesterday? I'm like, I don't think so. And the reason why, the bird yesterday had a really thick brush on him.
Paint brush, yeah.
And it had a little crook at the end of it.
Yeah.
This bird had a thinner brush, and it was kind of swirled at the bottom.
Right, yeah, it just looked different. I don't think it was the same bird.
And we're like, okay, well, what happened to the other three hens? Because he had five with him. This one only had two with him. So we heard another one gobble back behind this bird. I mean, he's a couple hundred yards back in there. We kind of feel like that's the bird that we were looking at yesterday. So, anyway, hopefully tomorrow we can double up and get both of them, hopefully. We're going to try. So, yep, that's where we're at on that one. So, same place as we were last year. Yep. We own birds every day. But
yeah, it takes us 3 days to get one.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get another guide service. I don't know. The hospitality and the food's good. The turkey hunting, I don't know.
Yeah, I can find them. I just can't kill them.
Well, you know, I see everybody posting pictures, and some people done tagged that. I'm like, that's never been me, like never. And again, you know, I'm usually hunting National Forest at home and what little farm you have here and there and hunt behind the house. But, like, it's tough. I mean, we talk about it, like, yeah. And the wind got up today. Like, the wind, it was horrible. And my experience has been that when that happens, they're not going to say much at all.
If they do, you can't hear them.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, next, you'll have to tune into the next episode to see what happens today, tomorrow. So, y'all tune in next week, and I'll catch you up on whatever happens. Hopefully, it's good, but if not, you know, man, I'm not at work. We went fishing yesterday, and I'm turkey hunting, so any day in the woods or on the water is better than work.
Yeah.
That's motto, right?
Right. No pressure.
Well, while we're...
Maybe a little pressure.
Nah. I don't... You know, like I said, we're seeing them. I mean, you're seeing them. It would be nice to, you know, to get one. But, like, I mean, we got to watch birds for 2 hours both days.
I've had birds close every day. Kind of Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, so... You know, you can't ask for nothing else. Well, we can, I guess.
Well,
hope we're going to get one tomorrow.
I'm hoping for two. Get two. I'll take one. We'll take one.
Yeah, we'll be satisfied with one.
Well, while we're catching up on last year, why don't we get everybody caught up? You come down in September, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
training season.
Yeah, we hunt a little bit. And I know we've talked and talked and talked, but... You know, season was a little bit tougher this year. September wasn't horrible, but the weather was bad while Jerry was down, so we didn't get to hunt raining. 3 days. Yeah. So, with the first morning, you remember what happened? I just had the young dogs, didn't I?
Yeah, I think so.
I had Hootie Heart, I guess Axe and Attica, and yeah, I don't know who I had. Sassy and Lady, maybe?
I really don't remember.
Did I have them pups with me? Did I have Briggs or Bronx or anything with me?
Yeah, you had Briggs, I think. I
had Briggs with me? Yeah. So, yeah, it was up in the morning, too. We ended up rigging a track and putting on it, and it went off the mountain down towards the creek, made a big loop in there and come back up the creek and crossed the road and headed up into a place we don't like to get during training season, and we're riding up the road, and, I mean, we're hearing the dogs. They're getting closer, and they're getting closer. And we'd actually stopped and got out, and I'm like, they're going to go up the road. So we jumped back in the truck. And the reason I know this, because I was watching the video the other day, I'll post that on the YouTube. When I download this podcast, I'll put some pictures of the turkey hunt, and I actually can put this video on there because it's a short one. But we jump in the truck, and we go up the road about 100 yards. And, man, that little scuzzer comes out. I mean, he's little, too, ain't he?
Yeah.
Like 50 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah, you could carry him under his arm.
He come across the road, and we jumped out and, like, catch him. So we called all the dogs and called them off of that one. And then Tuesday morning, or whatever day it was, Thursday, Friday, whatever day it was, the next day it was raining. It rained pretty much the night, so I'm like, you know what? We'll just take the young dogs and go out and do a little trash breaking. And so we took the bee litter. That's all it took, wasn't it? Did I have anything else?
No, you just had three, I think.
Briggs, Bishop, and Bronx, or Biggs. Briggs, Bronx, and Bridger. Yep. So we go up and we roaded them a little bit. We did see some deer, didn't we?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I put them out on some deer. So Here's a dilemma I'm in. If you guys listen to podcasts, you kind of know how I feel about trash breaking. But this litter has been a little different. So we, whatever, I don't, them deer crossed the road. Did we turn them loose on two deer or just one?
We turned them loose on two deer.
Two different times?
Yeah.
Okay. So the first time, they were roading. We were roading them. Mm-hmm. And the deer jumped and come right across the road in front of them, didn't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so as soon as we seen that, I'm on it, and I've got my Garmin set up where I can hit all three of them. I don't have to change anything. I've got 1, 2, 3, and I can hit any of the buttons and take care of it instead of flipping through it. So I went ahead and just tap. And that was it. Like, it didn't take much. And they went on. We went on around the mountain. And I don't quite remember the second time where we were at. But I don't even think I had to get them on that one.
No, they didn't show any
interest. Yeah.
None at all.
All right. So back to the dilemma. I had a hard time getting these dogs to take their own track. So I break it down and I try to process it. And in my mind, like, I don't put a lot of pressure on the dogs until I get them on the game that I want them to get on. Like, I want them running bare. I want to put them on bare, do a little cleanup, put them on bare, do a little cleanup. That's kind of my philosophy. But these guys I've had a hard time. Like, they did not want to take their own tracks. Now, by the end of December, we had some trash races, and they didn't have no problems doing it. Bronx and Bridger were my main problems. Briggs would go a little bit, but he'd always drop out pretty quick. He wouldn't go along. So I don't know. I've got to rethink that process and make sure that I'm not messing something up. And again, it may just have been this litter. It may just be the style of dogs that they are. They're very easy dogs. And when I say easy, it don't take a whole lot when you need to correct them. Like, it don't take a lot. Like, you can pretty much raise your voice and that's enough for two of them. So I don't know. But you were with me. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I know they, you know, it seemed like that they didn't really care a whole lot about those deer. You know, if they had of, they would have definitely, you know, got in on that sight chase. But you know, I got some puppies now, and the last three or four puppies I've raised, you know, I try to put a handle on them pretty early. But when I start trying to cast them, it don't seem like they want to go. And back years ago, when we didn't even try to break them off deer, they just ran them, you know, and they'd usually quit them on their own. But sometimes I think you're better off to wait, let them run them, and then try to break them. I know it's harder probably to break them then after they get started on them, but I don't know. Seems like when we had deer chasers, we had better dogs.
Well, so, yeah, I'm with you, and I've actually done this. I mean, been the same way. I never really tried to break my dogs before I started hunting them. Like, I've never done that until here recently, you know, the last 5 years or so. But again, we were using the old telemetry collars, and I didn't have access to break them.
Yeah.
So that changed things. But I do know, I feel like what you, in fact, one of the best dogs I've owned, one of the better dogs that I've ever owned, the reason I got him because he was a trashy SOB, and the guy couldn't stand it. And I'm like, I'll take him. And did I ever get him broke? Probably not. But man, you put him in a bear track, he was there to stay. So I get that. And I, like I said, I don't want to shortfall the dogs. I don't want to I don't want to have to put more effort into it than it already takes. And I'm not saying that I'm lazy. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that, like, if you're getting them and you're like you said, they don't want to go, they don't want to go, they don't want to go. Is it a genetic thing or is it a training thing? There's only one or two things there. So I'm going to reevaluate. And like I said, those dogs had been on bear before I ever started that process. But they were definitely a different. They were different. And like I said, I didn't. You was there. I didn't get on them hard at all.
No.
Like it was just a tap 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 tap, and they were done. I mean, they were done with it. They didn't care. Yeah. So I guess we'll see this year. This training season coming up. So yeah, we spent that day riding around doing a little trash breaking, and the next day I think it rained us out. So that was it. You're going to get down this year, aren't you, in December?
I'm trying my best to.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll change things up a little bit. It'll be a little bit cooler.
Yeah.
won't be as much riding around. Yeah, I'll tell you that. So while we're talking about pups, we had this conversation yesterday, and I thought it was very interesting that when I went by Jerry's kennel, I seen a blue English dog in there, and I thought, oh, Lord, he's done fell off the wagon. Like, we're going to have to get him back straight. Put some tricolor back in that. Anyway, I was asking him about the dog, and I'm like, is that yours? And he's like, yeah, and we got to talking about it. And, you know, this is always a factor when you talk about dogs. Like, you can get a pup out of two of the best dogs you know, and that pup's going to carry those genetic traits or they're not. And, you know, one of the things you said is the pup's dad had a really, really big booming mouth.
Yeah, supposed to.
Yeah.
I haven't really hunted with him, but everybody says he's got a big mouth. But, you know, that's the thing about getting you start out with a six-week-old puppy. You really don't, there's so much that you don't know about that pup, you know, till he develops some, which I've always had better luck saying, like buying a semi-started dog or something. That way, at least you know what kind of mouth they're going to have. If they're treeing, you can tell a little bit about the treeing habits. You can tell if they're going to open a lot on the ground, if they're not. You can tell if they're going to have a lot of hunt to them. You can tell if they're going to, how gamey they are. And when they're 6 weeks old, you don't know that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my biggest disappointment in this pup so far is his mouth. And, I just, maybe it'll get better, but I don't really see it doing it. But things like that, just, you can't tell when they're 6 weeks old. So.
No. he acts a little hyper. Is he hyper?
Yeah, he's hyper.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I know I say this, but I had to do a double take.
Yeah,
because I know you have some. You got a bird dog.
I got a bird dog, and there's another English dog in the kennel too.
Oh, you hiding it? You putting it out in the back? It,
yeah.
Jerry, this is what you got. Yeah. When you set your kennel up, you got to put the off color dogs in the back, but the tricolor ones in the front, right?
Right.
Guys, I'm just picking. I'm just picking.
I'm not colorblind.
No, I'm not either. my kennel looks like a circus.
Yeah.
I got an elephant, two giraffes, and an ostrich.
My walker dog, my walker female, has got almost as many ticks on her as that English dog does. So, but, you know, it's just color don't mean a whole lot to me. I like a good made dog, confirmation, you know, but... everybody likes a red-headed blanket back walker, but, you know, it doesn't, that's not very high on my list.
Yeah, but I tell you one thing, it does make it easier to hunt them when you like to look at them.
Oh, yeah.
But I say this every time, man, you pick out the ugliest pup in litter, that's the one that makes it.
Yeah.
He's a survivor already. you was talking about ticks. So my ring dog... My old ring dog, he had a bunch of ticks on him, front end, under his belly, and this the great 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 pup grand pup that I have out of him, he's ticked up the same way, and that's why, I may have messed this up And sometimes I feel like I did. But I ended up keeping that pup because he favored him.
Yeah.
He looks almost identical to him.
Yeah.
And I was going to let my buddy, I was going to let Ben have him. And when it come time to get Benny's pup, I'm like, I can't. Chelsea's like, you better think about that. And I'm like, I hate picking a – I mean, it's hard to pick a dog just on color. And I'd already done some work with them. There wasn't really no difference in the three or four that I had at the house at the time. Yeah, there wasn't a big difference in them. I mean, the one that Ben got was the first one that started doing the trail drags. He stayed with it. He was a little bit more patient, and I keep kicking myself in the butt for that. The one that I kept was not as patient, which I hope he matures out of that. But he still would, you know, he'd still take those tracks, and a lot of times he'd get in front of the other one and go on with them, which again reminded me of Ring. And like I said, when it come down to it, I ended up doing it because the color, like he colored up, big blaze face, ticks up the front end, and I'm like, God, I mean, this is like a splitting image,
right? You know, these breeders that you hear have these family lines for, you know, same breed, the same thing, you know, year after year and for generations, and seem like they can always pick those puppies out, even though, you know, at 6 weeks old, what it's going to carry on, and they go by color a lot. So I don't know if that, you know, that color means they're going to get the rest of their genes too, but I know several people I can name that, you know, they pick what they're keeping and they sell the rest of them or whatever, and they, you know, they always turn out. So
I'm not that good. Like I tell myself that, but it never works out that way. Yeah. But you know, Dale Cameron used to tell me the same thing.
Yeah,
he's like, mm-hmm. when they're born, I can tell you. I'm like, yeah. What? Mm-hmm. And I don't discredit that. I mean, I'm sure that he was telling it like it is, but I never understood it.
Yeah.
And
yeah, they're just picking, you know, what's been better for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're picking something that looks like that.
Yeah. No, I have. Well, I tell you what, the sassy pup that I got from Carl and Chris, when they sent me pictures, I picked out the one I liked that looked the best. I said, yeah. I mean, I didn't know anything about them. I'm like, just send me that, and it looks good. So that's the one I got. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then what other dog did I do that to? Tilly, Carl, again, come from Carl. He brought a handful of pups for me to pick through, and I was like, yeah, all right, she looks good. I'll take her. So to me, it's just a gamble. But I think genetically, back to this dog training, genetically, if the dog has it and they're put in the right hands, they're going to.
Yeah, opportunity is the main ingredient.
Well, I mean, just like, you know, we're sitting here talking. I will not disclose on this podcast how many dogs that I have that I shouldn't have because it's almost overwhelming. But the bunch that I'm hunting this year is like out of the six that I'm getting ready to undertake a huge challenge, I don't see a big difference in them. Like, they all have some really good qualities. They're all gamey. I've already tested that. I know they're gamey. They're all looking up. They all want to run. I mean, it's like, how do you have this many young dogs and not have a cull or two?
Yeah.
Right? Like, how do you have this many and not, and I'm not saying they're, you know, by the end of the year, they may all be. But me looking at face value and what little bit of stuff I've done with them. In fact, I posted a picture last week of them on a tie-out. I put them on a tie-out. And, I mean, I'm changing things up all the time with them. So there's four of them right there, but there's two a little bit older that you're not getting to see as much. But and one of them looks like Ring. Yeah, I mean, it's like I don't see a huge difference. I will be highly surprised. Now, are they going to make world beaters? Probably not. But I feel like all of them, with what I've seen, have the ability and the potential to run and tree game. Like, and that's hard. Like, I went through so many years and so many stages where I'd go through 10 dogs and none of them would suit me. And I think maybe it was me and Richie, or I don't know who I was on the podcast with, but, you know, when you're raising those dogs yourself, you and I talked about this, when you're raising those dogs yourself and you're investing the time in them, they seem to suit you a little better.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, yeah, I'm putting a handle on mine, but I don't think I'm overdoing it. Like, you know, they're loading, they're leading, you know, start to feed them in the dog box, and, you know, I'll get them up on top of the dog box here in the next week when I get back from, you know, being on vacation this week and traveling all over. So, you know, it just seems like they're more pleasing to you because you've done what you like, what you like to see in a dog. And I think that's another thing too.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I think it was me and Richie was talking about that. But and I got the little terror from him. And again, it's like she's just too smart for her own good, man. Like, she wearing me out. Like, she testing every patient I have, and I feel like I'm pretty patient when it comes to training dogs. And she poking at me. She's like, "Huh, you like that? You like that? Yeah, I'll do this." Like, she's full of herself. But I mean, like I said, I hate to say I see greatness in her because that'll always bite you, but she does the things that the dogs that make your good dogs, like, she's doing those things. So she's testing your patience. That's what she's doing. She's like, get used to it because you're going to have about 10 more years of it. Oh.
Been my experience that the puppies that tear the most up around the house make the best ones.
Well, I got a yard full of them. I mean, literally, I've been picking up because, of course, we have to start mowing, right? Welcome to Virginia. You can get all four seasons in an hour. Just sit down for 15 minutes and it'll do something different. But, yeah, I started picking up the yard last week because I needed to hit some high spots. And I don't know where she gets all this stuff.
Yeah.
She bring. I mean, half of Chloe's barn's up the house. Like, I don't know where she's getting some of it. There was a broken, I guess it come from the porch, a planter, you know, put flowers in. Mm-hmm. There was one of them laying, and it was a pottery. It was a glass one. It was laying out in the yard when I started mowing the other day, and I'm like, well, where did this come from? It was broke. I guess she broke it and took it out in the yard or broke it out in the yard. I don't know what she did with it. But, yeah.
Dead birds, any
birds, rabbits.
My puppy last fall, I threw that dead bird out of the yard 15 times, I guess. Every time I let her out, she'd go find that dead bird.
Was that one of them English pointers you're hunting?
No, that was one of those little tree and curves.
We know, Jerry, we know. yeah, I mean, mine do. In fact, I don't even throw the stuff out anymore. I put it in a dog food, empty dog food bag, and throw it away because you're gonna be seeing it and seeing it and seeing it and seeing it. So, and the girls, if it's a dead animal, they wig out. I don't know. One of them killed a rabbit last year and brought it in. They were fussing over it, but like, I can't help it. Well, I didn't have nothing to do with it. But yeah, like back to the pups. Like, you know, I don't see a huge difference in them. Like I said, they're all showing things that you would want to see. Like, if you told me here's six pups, you know, pick out one. You just reach down and grab one. And if I had to, honestly, at this point, because I know what all of them are, I pick the one I like to look at the best.
Yeah.
I go back to the looks.
Yeah, right.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, looks matter, but, you know, it's to me, especially the color. I mean, like I say, I like a confirmation, good confirmation dog. And feet are really important on a dog, especially a hound.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something has to put miles under it. And but, you know, if you got one of the same ability, then get the good colored one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're talking about color blindness. Like, I mean, most of my dogs look like walkers, even though they are technically. I mean, yeah, they've got mixed up stuff in. Most the stuff that's out of old Ring, and of course, Ring's granddaddy was out of a walker black and tan cross, but you were getting some high tans out of that. Every time I bred Ring, I'd get a high tan looking dog. And because of my old Frosty dog, he was a black and tan with a big white patch on his chest and nose. I've always kind of been partial to a high tan looking dog. I really like the color. But yeah, and my Hootie and Hart, which are out of Spook, they've got black. They're black and white dogs. But that's because their mother was out of a registered blue tick male and a female that went back to my Ring dog. So that blue actually threw a lot of black in that. That's why they're black and white.
Yeah.
People ask me that all the time. They're like, what's them dogs out of? Them black and white dogs, they're good looking dogs. Confirmation, they're put up good. They got good bone structure, got good feet, good heads on them, good hanging ears. I like a little bit darker eye.
Yeah, I do too.
The light eyes, the crazy look, I call them crazy eyes.
Yeah.
They worry me a little bit, and I know it's probably just me.
Looks like nobody's home.
Yeah. Exactly. I've had some bad experiences with those dogs, so I guess that's why I pay attention to it. But yeah, I mean, they're put together good. They're flat mixed up dogs.
My wife used to make fun of me because I would, you know, pick traits out I didn't like about a dog when I saw him. I'd say, hey, you know, things like that matter, you know. It matters how much ear they got. It matters, you know, the length of the muzzle, you know, the size of the head. It matters the legs if they're not straight. And it matters about the feet. You know, you got to have good feet on a dog. If you don't have, you know, it's like they say, you say about a horse, no foot, no horse, but no dog, no foot, no dog.
That's right. And, you know, that goes all the way back. This kind of circles back to what we were talking about. You know, when you breed two dogs, unless you've been doing it and breeding your own line, you really don't know.
Right.
You know, you don't know. And, again, it goes back to outcrosses. And when you define an outcross for me, I'll just define it for me. It's when you breed something that has no lineage back. It's supposed to be five generations, but I usually go back three. As long as nothing in the three generation is anywhere kin, that's kind of considered an outcross. But, you know, when you're outcrossing dogs, which, again, it depends on who you talk to, what world you're in, you know, how do you know? Like, if you've never bred that cross before, like all those chromosomes, like how do you know? Like,
yeah,
they're matching up. They're like you said, you know, you breed two dogs with really good strong mouths, and you get a chirp.
Yeah, right.
You know, I don't know. I guess if we had the answers to that, somebody would be rich.
Yeah, we wouldn't have to do this podcast.
That's right. Right. We'd be on a big farm killing some turkeys, Jerry. We'd be getting after some turkeys.
Yeah, West hunting bear or something.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we'll go do a little traveling this year. I mean, this is kind of my first trip. Of course, the rest of it will probably be dogs, unless I draw an elk tag. If I draw an elk tag, I'm gone. We going out west. But the rest of it will be – I've got to get those dogs. I mean, I've got to find out what I've got, and I've got to sort through it and – I can't keep everything I've got. I've done told myself that. And my problem is I don't want to get rid of some of the dogs, and the girls at the house don't want to get rid of the other one. So it's like a no-win situation. Something got to go. Like, come on, man. Killing me. Any thoughts?
No, I'm not going elk hunting with you.
Yeah, I'm. That's on my bucket list. I'd like to kill a moose too. And if a mule deer is an option, I'll take it. But moose and elk are my two bucket list. And I'd like to kill a good bull, both. And I've put in my tag in Maine a couple times, but I never drew for a moose. So that's just not working out, but we'll keep after it. The closer I get to retirement, just frees me up for more time to do stuff like this. Instead of 2 or 3 days, I'll be out here for a week. You won't have no time off then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? All right. Well, let's crank this one out. If you guys want to hear how tomorrow goes, tune in to next week's episode of What's Up Wednesday. Jerry, thank you for having me.
All right. Good to have you here.
Do you like to be outdoors like I do? If so, unlock the wilderness with Onyx Maps. It is your ultimate guide to exploring, hunting, and conquering the great outdoors. With detailed maps, real-time tracking, and exclusive access to public and private lands, Onyx Maps is your key to adventure. Discover the possibilities and never get lost again with Onyx. So subscribe today using the promo code K920, letter K, number 920, and know where you stand.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.